G'day, it's Linda Ross with the Garden Clinic Digs Deeper podcast. It's a cold morning and I'm walking around one of the best camellia nurseries in Australia. It's a specialist nursery and it's the dead of winter. It's freezing cold and misty, and this is the best place I know to see the breadth of camellia blooms.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graham Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, Sea Sol your plants.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.
I love the camellia genus, Theaceae. They're a genus of beautiful flowering shrubs, probably mostly from the Himalayas and east to Japan and China, of course, and Indonesia. And this diversity is why there's really a camellia for every single spot in your garden. Sometimes I look around Australian gardens and the majority of them are jam-packed full of Chinese plants. Azaleas and camellias make up most of our garden plants and have for decades. They're an easy plant to grow, particularly on the eastern seaboard of Australia. They're very pest-free usually, and they're just absolutely breathtaking in winter. Camellias were officially documented in history with drinking tea. In 1737, tea was of course made from the leaves of Camellia sinensis. And here it is here at the nursery, a fairly nondescript looking shrub with fairly insignificant flowers. But the leaves of the Camellia sinensis were infused into hot water and drunk, of course, probably about 3,000 years before the Western discovery of China and Japan. I love a cup of tea, and the first reference to an English brew was a letter from the East India Company dated the 27th of June 1615. Now that's 500 years ago. And the first shipment of camellia may have reached London in 1650. Now the whole story is so fascinating, a drink that we drink on a daily basis coming from China, and the tea plants that were propagated and transported from China to England back then, and how the Chinese outsmarted the English by supplying a decorative Camellia japonica instead of the sinensis, which of course resulted in England's love affair with the decorative and gorgeous Camellia japonica that adorns our gardens in winter. The first Camellia reticulata, one of my favourites for its big blooms the size of dinner plates, was brought from Canton region of China in 1820, much later, and Sasanqua's a few years later again. Look, all of the species of camellia grow into low evergreen trees, really, with glossy leaves, making them impossible to really identify without flowers. A rare sensation, it's just here I can see it, was the yellow camellia. It's still rare and unusual to this day. Its leaves are a bit quilty and dark. Flowers themselves are gorgeous, golden, waxy flowers with very thick petals. Breeding as yet has still not resulted in lemon or peach or apricot camellias, but I'm thinking that breeders, that's what they're wanting. Let's start, shall we, at the very beginning with the tiny little miniature camellias. I like to call them the fairy wand camellias. A lot of them are species camellias. They're absolutely adorable as a single specimen. They have a light, airy canopy, and a lot of the habit is weeping and soft. They're beautiful and often flouted for their flamboyant cousins, the Camellia japonica and reticulata, but we think the miniature flowering camellias should be planted much more often. Why? Well, masses and masses of dainty, tiny little blossoms ring each weeping branch, sparkling a bit like diamonds on a cold winter's day. You get heaps of bang for your buck, tiny little flowers, but encrusted on each stem. stem, from pure white right through to red. I particularly like the little white baby bear and Bogon Snow. There's some beautiful Wirlinga Bride, and Tinsy is a real favourite with many of my friends for its little cute as a button red petals with golden stamen centre. So where would you use a miniature camellia, a little one that I like to call the fairy wings? Well, I think just one as a specimen in the middle of your lawn, maybe as a soft or informal hedge between neighbours, or perhaps just to block a shed or an ugly view. They're quite different to the heavier cousins because they're lighter, more willowy, I think. And each of the miniature blossoms looks more like a cherry blossom than a camellia. The size, well, they'll get up to about 4 metres. And if you haven't seen a miniature camellia or a fairy one camellia, go and have a look. Do yourself a favour. They're awesome. I like to plant them with other things that flower in winter too. So Daphne, of course, with that sweet lemon scent. Hellebores with their shy, droopy faces. Snowdrops in winter. Wood violets, of course, those gorgeous little deep purple violets carpeting the floor under my camellias. And plectranthus are really good companions for camellias. We'll move on, shall we, to the next bro of camellias. Now, these are the Sasanquas. And I always think S for Sasanqua and S for sun, because these are the camellias that love the hot, dry sun. Great hedge between neighbours, thick as anything, and wonderful hedge to grow. Often simple flowers start in April. They're the first of the camellias usually to flower. Yeah, the birds love them because of their stamens. And if you're thinking of growing a sunny Sasanqua hedge between you and your neighbours, it's good to plant them about a metre apart. Don't plant them any closer. They'll start to compete with each other for nutrient and sun and shade. But plant them a metre away. And if you're planting them along the boundary of your house, bring that hedge in at least half a metre. Don't put them too close to the fence or they'll overshadow themselves. I always suggest when planting a hedge, plant them and then take the tops off. It's like decapitate the tops or the heads, because what happens with Camellia Sasanqua in particular is that there's a hormone that makes the tallest of the tip head for the stars or for the sun. And if you decapitate the top, all of the nodes, the other lateral nodes become active, and all of those will start to burst into new growth, and you'll get a much more lateral sideways growth, which will mean your hedge is thicker, more lustrous, grows as a better hedge and is a thicker hedge all the way down to the ground. And so you don't get any sort of spaces between your hedge if you're wanting a complete coverage. So that's the Sasanqua camellias for sun. Although some of those old Sasanquas I see in old homes and gardens, those Sasanquas grow like big trees and spread their boughs at least 5 metres wide and carpet the floor every April, May with beautiful circles of petals. Now the next camellia we're up to now in this beautiful nursery are perhaps some of my favourites, the Japanese camellia, also called Camellia japonica. And these are the queens of winter, I like to call them. Unrivaled for glamour, down to earth, easy to manage, and very long lived. Did you know that the Camellia japonica arrived in the Western world from the Orient in 1826? Well, it's sparked a storm of interest with Camellia japonicas, and they're absolutely stunning. There could be 20, 25,000 named varieties of them, so it's very hard to identify each one of them because of the number and profusion. Camellia japonicas grow into that classic small tree, but they prefer dappled light, perhaps like under a gum tree or a crepe myrtle. They hate the afternoon sun. And some of the white ones really don't like morning sun either, because the white lighter buds will get the dew from the early morning. That dew will burn and the buds won't be able to swell and actually open. So some of the lighter camellias shouldn't really be put in morning sun. I love the Camellia japonica. They grow from subtropical Brizzy to the frosty hills of Tassie. and they flower pretty much from April, May right through to October, depending on your variety. They are very versatile small trees. They can be hedged, they can be lollipopped, they can be trained into decorative espalier. You can bonsai them as well. You can even choose some of them for pots on balconies and verandas. If it's in the wrong spot, the great thing with Camellia japonicas is that they can be transplanted really easily. They've got very shallow root systems, and as long as you pick the right time of year, like autumn, to move them, they transplant beautifully. Just take as big a root ball as you can and spray them with some seaweed solution to help that camellia settle in. You can encourage bigger flowers of your Camellia japonica by actually disbudding in late summer, early autumn. And that just means twisting off with your thumb and forefinger some of the smaller buds on the end of those stems. Never let your Camellia japonicas dry out, especially during a long hot summer with temperatures getting into the 40s. A cheap drip system will keep them happy. And a good thick layer of mulch will help that root system retain its moisture and keep those superficial or surface roots nice and moist and happy. Prevent root rot fungus by spraying once a year with anti-rot. That's a common question on the Garden Clinic radio show. What are my favourite Camellia japonicas? Well, I absolutely love the ones that are formal doubles. They're like water lilies and they're absolutely exquisite. The petals are like perfect spirals with layers and layers of concentric and overlapping petals with a central cone of furled petals that I love. Particularly ones like Desire, soft and ivory with a blush of pink. Nuccio's Drem, Nuccio's Pearl are some really big favourites. I love the red formal double, Red Red Rose. Oh, and here's another lovely red one I can see, Roger Hall, with beautiful plum purple petals. Black Lace is a great one. And the pure white ones, the semi-doubles. I think Love Light is definitely a favourite. Pure white with that central boss of stamens. Great for shady spots along the side of a house where it doesn't get much sun at all. But if you like white camellias, look out for the Silver Waves, perfectly named. It's got a wavy petals, pure white, and a lovely open boss of golden stamens. There's hundreds to choose from, and it's really difficult to make your mind up. But when you come to Camellia Grove, the nursery that I'm in today, they lay out all of the cut camellias and they put their names on for us so we can look into their beautiful faces and see which ones we want to take home with us. Buttons and Bows, that's a stunning one too. I love it. Soft pink, concentric circles, beautiful overlapping petals, absolutely exquisite. There's lots of different flower types with camellias. You know, everything from the single, which is just one row of petals, and then semi-doubles, which is two rows of petals that gently overlap. That's a bit like Love Light. Then the formal doubles, which are my favourites. That's just perfect spirals of overlapping petals. Then you've got these really interesting ones. Sometimes they call them the peony, sometimes the anemone form, which is a little bit looks like a waratah, actually, with those outer layers of petals as a ring and then a central mass of frill petals in the middle, some with stamens and some without. The anemone type are gorgeous. Then there's the rose. Several layers of overlapping petals to show off the central stamens. Absolutely gorgeous. I'm often asked, what camellias have fragrance? Well, surprisingly, not that many. There's one called High Fragrance would be on the top of my list for having an intense fragrance that really perfumes the whole garden when it's out. It's a lovely frilly pink camellia and its fragrance is the best. A lot of the other camellias with fragrances have usually been bred with Luchuensis, the fragrant species camellia. Look out for one called Sensuous. It's gorgeous. High Fragrance I mentioned, and Sweet Emily Kate, a real stunner of a fragrance as well. The last camellias, but not the least, are the giant reticulata camellias that really flower in August and September. These are the glamour girls, the giant glamour girls of spring, and they're enormous. They cheer us up, and their flowers are like big ruffled flamenco skirts. Most of the camellia reticulatas come from the Yunnan province of China, along with magnolias and peonies and cherry blossoms, things like rhododendrons as well and clematis. Scattered forests and century-old reticulatas live on the Yunnan province's hills and dales. The Chinese know these flowers as nine hearts or precious pearls, purple gown and butterfly wings. And the flowering of reticulatas, interestingly, coincides with Chinese New Year. So they symbolise the wealth and prestige of that time. They're often cultivated in monastery gardens in Yunnan. Look, the plant has a fascinating history around the world, and I would suggest if you're interested in the history of camellias and reticulatas to look at Sterling McAvoy's books on the subject. You'll find them at a good second-hand bookshop, or go to Florilegium and see if you can get one there. It's a fascinating story how reticulatas left China, went to Japan in 1695, and one went to England in 1820, where it flowered 6 years later in the glasshouse of Thomas Carey Palmer in Bromley. So it was named after its importer, Captain Raws, and you can still buy that one. One of the plant collectors, Robert Fortune, delved into the wilds of Yunnan and Sichuan provinces and brought back a collection of reticulatas, one which was later named after him, Robert Fortune. I love Ellie's Girl. It's definitely a favourite. It's a gorgeous mid-pink and formal double flowers. Valentine's Day is a lovely red, of course. I love that one as well. But there's lots and lots of stunning, huge, blousy camellia reticulatas. Dr. Clifford Parks makes a sensationalist display and is one of the best red camellia reticulatas. Well, some growing tips. What do you do if you've got a few little problems? Let's start with the most asked question. The leaf looks like it's scorched, but it's not sunburn at all. It's the work of two spotted mite. This is also called the ribbed tea mite, and the pest is common in dry, warm, hot gardens, especially those that are drought affected, particularly through November and March. Control is necessary to prevent the disfiguring of the leaves. They look burnt for all intents and purposes, look like they've been scorched along the central midrib of the leaf. It's really important to keep the water up to camellias, especially during January and February when it's so hot and so dry. You can mist the leaves to keep them moist, and that keeps the populations down, or spray them with my magic mix, Eco Oil, during the summer as well. Now, aphids, they can be a problem, sucking the life out of your camellias, but again can be easily treated with a magic mix of Eco Oil and Eco Neem with my Eco Amino Grow as well. Scale, again, scale can find camellias quite tasty and can proliferate on leaves, sucking the life out of them. Now, camellia scale is hard and crusty, and it might not even look like a scale, but it's over all the leaves. And again, the magic mix that we talk about in a previous podcast is a perfect quick fix for camellias. Just make sure you use that treatment on a weekly basis to make sure that scale disappears quickly. Leaf gall. Leaf gall, I often get a little question every now and again. And the question is, why is my leaf deformed and thick and leathery? That's the work of leaf gall. It's a fungus that's becoming increasingly common on spring growth around the September-October time. It spreads by bursting spores from a gall on the underside of the leaves, and there's really no chemical control. Just prune off that affected leaf and dispose of it in the bin, and wipe your secateur blades clean too with some metho after pruning them off. Camellias really don't get many problems at all, and if you can keep up that magic mix of the Eco Oil, Eco Neem and Eco Amino Grow, it really keeps them pest-free. Sometimes camellias will produce too many buds, resulting in stunted and twisted blooms. And if there's too many buds on your camellias, it's easy just to twist some of the smaller ones off and allow that energy to go into the bigger buds and make bigger flowers. Transplanting, well, the best one to transplant are the Camellia japonicas. If they're in the wrong spot, they're getting too much sun or not enough sun, that's best done in winter. And of course, when you're transplanting, firstly remove the buds and the flowers and then lightly prune all over. Transplant into its new position, taking as big a root ball as possible, watering in with seaweed and just making sure that there's no air pockets between the hole and the new root system, because if there's any air pockets, those roots will die and you'll get some dieback in the canopy as well. So make sure you make a slurry mix of soil and water and really slurry that soil down into the hole and make sure it's packed nice and dense with beautiful, rich camellia soil. All in all, camellias love moist, rich soil, but they don't have deep root systems. So every year, just top up around your camellias with a couple of inches of cow manure, a little handful of blood and bone, some specialist camellia fertilizer, like one called Kahuna is excellent. Maybe even as well a slow-release fertilizer for camellias. And if your camellias are struggling, that could be because the pH is all wrong. They really do love a soil that's on the acid side of neutral. But if you do all those things and a little drip system to keep them moist and perfect in summer, your camellias will reward you with an absolute profusion of winter flowers. And the best way I know how to display them is in old silver platters and float bowls, where I pick the flowers off my camellias and I upend them in float bowls and put them on the dining table and really get to enjoy looking into their faces and the profusion of petals and the wonderful stamens, and really get to enjoy all the aspects of the camellia in float bowls. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this podcast that's delved into a couple of the varieties of camellias that we know and we love, and a little bit of troubleshooting to keep them healthy and happy in your garden. Next week, we talk to Ross Campbell, head of Camellia Grove Nursery and third generation camellia nurseryman. He's a wealth of information about camellias. I'm so happy that he's on. You'll get a lot of information about troubleshooting, and he'll also give us his special camellias for pots. So if you're on a balcony or veranda, some great ideas for you. This is Linda Ross with the Garden Clinic Digs Deeper podcast. It's been great to have your company. If you've got any questions on camellias, please head to the Garden Clinic Facebook page. You can upload your photo and we can identify and give you the treatment and the advice straight away. Maybe you'd like to upload your favorite camellia. I'd love to see it. The Facebook page is an easy way of sharing all of that. Thank you for your company. Please go safely and happy gardening.
The best garden in the street.
G'day, Graham Ross here. Now, you all know I love my gardening, and we all know that Sea Sol is simply fantastic for keeping your garden healthy and looking great. But did you know that Sea Sol reduces transplant shock and dramatically increases the plant's survival rate when they're newly planted? Now, look, it's like an insurance policy for your plants. So when you're planting out your seedlings and new plants in your garden, don't just water them in, Sea Sol your plants.
Don't forget the Sea Sol.